We'll call them the committee to order. Representative Gazelka moves the minutes of the March 17th meeting.
So moved.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Chair moves House File 563 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. Representative Knobloch, to your bill.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 563 provides that service cooperatives can offer their health insurance plans to the private sector in addition to the school districts, counties, and cities that they currently offer them to. Service cooperatives, formerly known as educational cooperative service units, have a long history of doing bulk purchasing for school districts and other entities and saving them money. They currently have approximately 150,000 lives insured across the state, have 7 offices and approximately 300 employees. Their annual pooled premium volume is approximately $450 million, and they currently have about 700 public employer groups and group pools across the state. Additional information about them and where these pools are and their offices should be in your packets. In the past 2 years, members, they've begun selling VEBA accounts, which are similar to health savings accounts. These plans have been very successful in providing another option to their members. This past year, premiums for these accounts rose at a rate in the single digit, unlike the double digit increases that you've seen for many other insurers, and they cost substantially less. Members, in this era of skyrocketing health care premiums, this bill provides one additional alternative for small businesses and other private sector concerns looking to help their employees. Many have bemoaned the lack of competition in Minnesota in health insurance, particularly in greater Minnesota, and have tried to figure out ways of attracting new competitors to the state. This bill would allow a new competitor who is already here to offer their products to the private sector and provide desperately needed alternatives. I have with me to help answer some detailed questions Paul Brinkman from Mountain Iron, who is representing the service cooperatives. Members, I urge your support and stand for questions.
Questions for members? Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Knobloch, just a quick question. You know, I'm a strong supporter of the Northwest Minnesota Service Cooperative. They provide great insurance to many of the public entities in our area. Do you have any knowledge about how this would impact the insurance rates for those customers already served by the service cooperatives?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moe, I don't believe it would impact their rates. Private sector employers that they would insure would be in a separate pool, and so they would not be combined with the current pools of school districts and other government entities.
Thank you.
Representative Wiedling, did you have a question?
Yes, I did. Mr. Chair. Representative Knobloch, if I'm understanding this, is it that the service cooperative under your bill could still cover both public and private employers, just not in the same pool, right? But we're not prohibiting them now from covering public.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, they would certainly still be offering their same services to public entities. The problem is right now they can only offer the services to public entities. They cannot offer them to the private sector. This would allow them to offer these products to the private sector.
Thank you.
Further questions, Representative Loeffler?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Knobloch over the tall chair there. I understand that we've passed laws in the past. I think Senator Sheila Cascaden was a leader in it in terms of trying to encourage more purchasing pooling on the private sector on a geographic basis, and that those have struggled to some degree, but a few are kind of moving along. Does this in any way threaten or change the market for others who are also trying to address this issue of affordable health insurance for private employers?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, I don't think it would really affect them, except in the sense that this is one more competitor, one more choice that people would have that isn't available right now. So to the extent that more competition affects other people, yes, there's more competition. But other than that, there's no direct effect that I can think of.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Knobloch. One of the ways that oftentimes pooling saves money for private employers, and I understand that your bill offers the chance to be self-insured, which tends to take people out of the Minnesota Care Premium pool and the MCHA contribution pool, which creates other issues for our ability to deal with those aspects of public policy. Have you done any kind of projections on what the impact might be on those other pools?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, first of all, on these pools that go to the private sector, the MSHA taxes and such will be paid. So there, that is part of the bill that won't be affected in that sense by this. We're not draining money out of MSHA. From the standpoint of self-insurance otherwise, I think you've already got people moving into all sorts of self-insurance products across the state. And I don't know, Mr. Brinkman, maybe you might be able to respond to any other aspect of that question.
Mr. Brinkman?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler.
Could you please introduce yourself for the record?
Yes, sir. My name is Paul Brinkman. I'm Executive Director of the Northeast Service Cooperative. I was reflecting on your previous question, Representative Loeffler. Could you repeat your question again, please?
Thank you. My first question is about, I understand that in different parts of the state we have authorized geographic pooling to address the issue of the private employer who's trying to get affordable insurance, and those are tending to happen in greater Minnesota, so they're not in my district. But since we've got those kind of moving, this seems like we're introducing potentially another competitor into that same area while the previously authorized, you know, effort directed by the legislature hasn't really reached fruition. So that was my first question. And the second question was about the projected impact of this in terms of AMCHA and payments into the Minnesota Care Healthcare Access Fund. And I understand that the bill does require AMCHA participation.
Chairman, Representative Loeffler, as noted in the bill does require that we work with licensed health insurance producers in the state of Minnesota. This would be another competitive opportunity or a competitive option for underserved areas of greater Minnesota. There is no question about that. But it does specifically allow us not only to work under existing law and statute and regulations, but also to work with current insurance producers in greater Minnesota. So we would be working in the current environment cooperatively with specialists in the field that are already serving some of these same clients.
The question is Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, is this bill in any way related to that issue that's out there about the teachers' possible pooling of their insurance?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I have been asked that question many times, and it has no relationship whatsoever. This is one of these bills that started, as I think a lot of people have bills start, with just going to a constituent meeting one day. I went to a meeting of my constituents that are at the St. Cloud Service Cooperative. They were talking about various issues they faced. They were talking about their health care products. I thought their products sounded pretty good. As a small business owner, I thought these might be products I'd be interested in purchasing. And then I found out, no, I couldn't purchase them. Even if I wanted to purchase them, I couldn't purchase them. And I thought, you know, why shouldn't people have that choice? And particularly in greater Minnesota, as you know, there aren't nearly the choices, and particularly even worse if you get outside of the regional centers like Rochester or St. Cloud, there just aren't the choices that you have in the metro area. And this is an established insurance provider that's throughout greater Minnesota. If you look at one of the charts that was passed out, they've got little dots where all the different pools are across the state. You can see they're everywhere throughout greater Minnesota, and I thought this would be a good solution to provide some additional insurance coverage in greater Minnesota. But it's got nothing to do with the statewide pool idea.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yeah, Representative Knobloch, I mean, it sounds, this bill actually to me sounds like a good idea, and I think actually that if that other thing should happen, this might be a very good thing because it gives the service cooperative some options because they have a lot of important functions in our community. So actually I think that even though, as you say, I take you at your word, it's not related, I think it still might be a good thing to have out there.
Some Knobloch, any?
Well, just to say, certainly if that other bill went through, this would provide an additional function that service cooperatives could continue to do. That is true.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Knobloch, isn't this service co-op's pool got one of the lowest, if not the lowest, administrative rates of any insurance pool in the state?
Representative Knobloch.
Representative Gunther, Chair Wilkin, I think I'll turn that over to Mr. Brinkman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, that is correct. Currently, our administrative fees for our school and city, county, other governmental pool are fixed at 6.1%. Within that 6.1%, the administrative fee paid to service cooperatives themselves is capped at $985 per member per month for the third year in a row. So we do beat the market in that area. Yes, sir.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to welcome my constituent from the Iron Range down here. Mr. Brigman's a good Iron Ranger. In fact, he could have moved off the Iron Range, but the group that hired him wouldn't let him operate from the range, so he chose to stay up there and turned on a really good job. But, you know, being a good Iron Ranger, he believes that government can do good things and quasi-government agencies can, and it's good to see Representative Knobloch moving towards the Iron Range way of thinking and towards universal coverage and socialized medicine. So, I'm just glad that he's keeping an open mind, especially now that he's looking at higher office and moving towards a reasonable approach towards quasi-governmental functions and the good they can do for our people.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I appreciate you being a co-author of the bill along with Minority Leader Intenza, and I have always believed that government can do some good things, even government on the Iron Range.
They always do good things on the Iron
Range. Okay, further questions? Seeing none, I think we're ready to go. The Chair renews his motion that House File 563 be recommended pass and re-referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Knobloch. Okay, Representative Foles, you want to go, and we'll see if we can get through somewhere. And members, I think we have to adopt the division report. The next two bills, with the Coles bill and the Demmer bill, if he gets back in time, are coming from the division. So first we have to adopt the division report. So Representative Coles moves the division report. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Coles moves that House File 434, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to...
Mr. Chair, maybe if we could start with 1548, which is my bill.
I'm sorry.
If Representative Downer can't make it back, he had two other bills up in another committee. I'd be happy to take care of his bill as well.
Okay.
I talked to him about that. So maybe, Mr. Chair, if we could
move
1548 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Jobs and Economic Development Finance Committee.
The motion is for us. And also, do we have an amendment that's in the packet to that?
Mr. Chair, the amendment did not actually get copied. The bill was amended in the division. I spoke with Mr. Pender. There is no engrossment when the bill goes from the division back to the full committee. So the amendment that was just passed out, I believe it's labeled A1, is an amendment that was adopted in the division. What that amendment does is it adds an additional reporting requirement. Representative Mahoney and the Jobs Committee, when we initially stopped there, requested that the report that is required by the bill be sent not only to the higher ed committees in both the House and the Senate, but to the Jobs Committees in both the House and the Senate as well. So that amendment went on in division, it wasn't engrossed, as Mr. Pender explained to me, and won't be until it leaves here.
Okay, so just so members understand, the amendment has been adopted already. We don't need to take action on it, but it's in front of you for your information so that you know how the current shape of the bill. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coles, we had also talked about an amendment dealing with coming under the corporate subsidy reporting app. I don't see that here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Coles.
Representative Clark, I will answer your question. Let me just very quickly explain to members what the bill does. This is the University of Minnesota Mayo Clinic Genomics Partnership Appropriation Bill. Provides $15 million for the partnership to help fund the research. We've all heard in various committee hearings over the course of the session what the partnership is about. I'm not going to spend any time right now talking about that, but that's what this bill does. It sets the funding. It's a one-time appropriation of $15 million. I fully anticipate that that money will be used as the initial appropriation was used, and that we'll be back again in 2 years with another request for an appropriation. Representative Clark, specifically to your question, yes, we did talk about that, and I am still very much interested. I still haven't had a chance to figure out what exactly it is. I don't serve on the Jobs Committee, and I haven't, and I'm happy to work with you as it goes back to Jobs. I have no objection to an amendment like that going on. I think the appropriate place to do it would be the Jobs Committee as the bill's being put together. I have no problem with an amendment like that. I'd be happy to work with you or Mr. Pender or whoever the House researcher is for the Jobs Committee.
Further questions?
Thank you.
Representative Clark?
Mr. Chair, no, I really, let's just make a plan, a time to do it, otherwise it probably won't happen. We're also busy, so if you can.
Fine, I think I saw you this morning in the parking lot. Maybe we should have done it there, but.
We could start again tomorrow morning, maybe. But anyway, I'd really appreciate if we could do that. And I do have just one other question about the bill itself.
Representative Clark?
I know, Mr. Chairman, you and I had some questions about some of the ethical issues involved, and I don't know, I did ask for some information from the two different bodies, and I don't know, did you get anything?
I had some discussions with some of the folks from Mayo and the U, but just informally, and some of my concerns have been addressed. Others are, I'm just trying to figure out what to do.
Well, maybe the author could help us. I thought at least I'd get the courtesy of the letter back, unless I missed it, which is possible. I don't think we've heard back, and it was kind of an important question.
Representative Coles?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I do recall, I believe last week, I received something from either the University of Minnesota or the Mayo Clinic. It was addressed to me. I wasn't directed to share it with others. I'm happy to share what I got, because I believe what I received, and I haven't had a chance to fully wade through it, I believe it was the University of Minnesota's policy on the type of research that they will conduct with public monies. I have that up in my office. I believe that was part of what you were getting at. I don't know if it addressed all of the concerns, but that was something that I know I had asked for at one point in time, and have since received it.
Mrs. Chair?
Clark.
Thank you. Part of my question was what their relationships are with private industry, and when you have a pharmaceutical industry or others who may bias the reporting by either bias the research or the priority for research. And I just wanted to, they said they had some rules in place that they would tell us about. And so if that wasn't included in your letter, then it doesn't sound like any of us have heard. So I would, maybe you can use your influence to ask them to do it. And hopefully maybe if there, I don't know if there's anybody here in the audience today from the university or from Mayo Clinic. There is. Maybe they could respond whether or not they've got something coming to us.
Representative Clark, we're trying to avoid additional testimony unless, if you really want to, we can. We've got a long schedule, but this is coming to Chairman Gunther's committee, and we can catch him there.
Mr. Chair.
That's fine. I can wait till then. I guess I just maybe I see some heads shaking in the audience. If they could just let us know, that would be
I know they did say that they had some policies in place, so I think they should get those copies of those to us. Representative Pulse.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I certainly agree, and I would ask, and I'll do it on the record here, I'd ask that the U and Mayo provide the information that you're requesting to you and more broadly to the Jobs Committee and anybody on this committee who is interested in seeing it.
Thank you very much.
Do you have further questions? Representative Rukavian.
Representative, Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Cole, I was just wondering, I see the appropriation is not a hefty sum. Not a hefty sum as far as some of the programs we have around here, but being the financial condition we're in this state, where do you propose to find $15 million?
Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I propose we find the $15 million in somewhere inside the $30 billion budget that we have. I suspect maybe later on today we're going to have an opportunity on the floor to discuss how big the House budget resolution is going to be. I think it's going to be about $30 billion, and that's about an 8% growth in revenues over the last biennium. I think we can find $15 million in there. This is a very promising, as we've heard many times from the U and from Mayo, this is a very promising program. It is a great, this joint partnership between the U and Mayo has enormous promise, not only for research that's going to help save lives and make lives better, but it also has a huge potential to see great commercialization, great economic development, which is going to mean jobs, good jobs here in Minnesota and elsewhere. And so I think we absolutely can find the $15 million somewhere in the increased revenues that the state has going forward.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, and certainly it's a promising field, and you're right, to essentially make life better. Actually, I have to tell you, I was a medical genomics experiment gone awry. I was supposed to be 65, but that's a whole other issue. But anyway, I know exactly. But, you know, there's a lot of worthwhile projects that make people's lives better. Nursing home funding has been stagnant for years. Medicaid has been cut, I think, the last 3 years in a row, and proposed to be cut in the governor's budget again. And to find $15 million in a budget that's just been hammered at, and people, I think, have been hurt over the last 3 years, is going to be difficult, you know. I would hope that as these bills come through here, some of the authors that, and I don't know, Representative Coles, if you took the No New Tax Pledge or not, but a number of your colleagues did, and you can't do programs like this without raising revenue from somewhere. Otherwise, you've got to cut programs, as you said, and find it. And I don't know where you cut anymore in this budget, or in this, in our whole state budget collectively.
Representative Rukavina, this is going to Chairman Gunther's committee, and then will be laid over for possible inclusion. So,
Chair.
Yep.
I realize that. I've been wrong here a few years myself, and I do realize that. But you know, government isn't free. Money doesn't grow on trees, and good projects like this one, and I'm not saying it isn't, have to find money from somewhere.
Other questions? Representative Coles renews his motion that House File 1548 be recommended pass and be referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Coles. Do you want to do Representative Demers' bill?
I'm happy to do Representative Demers' bill. Mr. Chair, I would move the adoption of the committee or the division report on House File 434.
Representative Coles moves the adoption of the division report on House File 434. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 434 is...
Let's get a motion from us. Representative Coles moves that House File 434 be recommended pass and be referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development Finance. Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members, House File 434 is almost identical to House File 1548, except that it projects the funding out for an additional 4 years. So it is a five-year appropriation stream. Representative Rukavina, this creates additional issues in the out years, and it's part of the reason that my bill is tailored as a one-time appropriation, knowing full well that we'll be back, but you're right, we have difficult decisions to make, and we have to find funding for these things if we can, and we're going to have to reevaluate where we're at in another year. But Representative Demers' bill goes a little bit further toward what the Genomics Partnership has said needs to happen in order to really make this as effective as we possibly can. And so Representative Demers' bill provides funding for 5 years. And what is not in Representative Demers' bill, I've talked with him, is the both the amendment that Representative Clark discussed, which is something that I understand from talking with him, he's happy to work with her on, and Representative Mahoney's amendment, again, it just wasn't drafted to his in the division, but again, that's something that we agree should happen. So, Mr. Chair, with that, really the only difference is the length of the appropriation. This is a five-year appropriation as opposed to the 1 year.
Okay. Questions from members?
Mr. Chair?
I represent Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Coles. As I pointed out in the subcommittee, I just really want to point out to members that although this bill goes a lot farther than the previous bill, the actual request by the partnership is a little different than this, and I'm not sure why we're not proposing something that actually does what they say they need to get the maximum benefit from this, which is a little bit of front-loading. So what they're asking for really is $18 million the first year, $13 million the second year, and then the rest in up to $70 million in equal installments in the next 3 years. So I don't know, maybe you could address that, Representative Coles, or do you plan to make some amendment at some other point or what?
Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, the short answer is yes, we plan to make this work in any way we can. The issue right now is that Chairman Gunther doesn't know what his target's going to be. This is going back to him. We're going to, Chairman Gunther's committed to the partnership and helping fund it appropriately. I'm committed to that. Representative Demmer is committed to that. It's just an issue right now of we had two separate bills moving through. We thought for efficiency's sake we'd keep them both moving, and yeah, they do slightly different things, but whether my bill gets amended to add additional funding in the out years or whether Representative Demmer's bill gets amended, whether we front-load the money, to use your term, or we leave it with a consistent appropriation of $15 million. We're going to continue to work with both the University of Minnesota and the Mayo Clinic and with Chairman Gunther and our colleagues over in the Senate to try to figure out how we can do this in the best way that we can. And so neither Representative Demmer or myself are committed to it absolutely has to be $15 million this year. If we can do 18 this year and 12 or 13 after that, and you know, figure out the funding stream, whatever we can figure out. But it's still essentially a work in progress. So yes, we're willing to amend it to conform with the budget constraints that we have, and try to help make this partnership as successful as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Coles. No, I appreciate that. This is one of those bills where I'm not sure where policy ends and finance begins, but I think that on the policy, you know, if the purpose of doing this is to try to help get some of the gains that have been explained to us, and, you know, we have all seen the presentations about sort of the expected returns on this, I think the front loading is a very important piece of that. And so, you know, I would just encourage you to really try to work toward that front loading, because, you know, getting things off the ground, I mean, we see that in a lot of areas. I think that's, as a policy matter, that's a very important piece of this.
Very briefly, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I can't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. I don't want Representative Rukavina to accuse me of being a big spender, but I'm happy to try to work to front loading some of this money if we can.
Thank you.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, you know, now we're getting to a little bit of money here, you know, your last bill. Now we're getting a little.
This is Representative real money. Bill, Representative Rukavina.
but I assume it's the same thing, and I should ask this on your bill also. How many jobs are we creating with this money?
What kind Representative of Coles.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, what this bill does is it provides an appropriation to the partnership to fund the research. What the goal of the research is ultimately to commercialize that research, whether it's the next Medtronic or whether it's 100 small companies that are employing 2 or 3 or 4 or a dozen employees doing whatever it is that the research yields. There are Certainly, if we can fund the partnership at this level, there will be increased opportunities within the partnership itself. But the goal of this is to fund the research that will ultimately yield a lot of really good jobs here in the state of Minnesota.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina,
I didn't kind of hear an answer in there. But what I'm saying is this: you've got a proposal, and I don't really haven't looked at the proposal from the partnership, but it's got to have some type of a business plan or something to show that we're going to hire, you know, we're getting $15 million a year and represent Dimmersville for 5 years, and we're going to hire three research folks or five or seven at the Mayo and 10 at the university, and we're going to do this, and we propose to eventually be able to commercialize this. And you know, I mean, you're not just giving somebody $15 million without having seen some type of business plan. With real numbers and real folks and everything.
Representative Coles.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riccovina, I cannot tell you as I sit here today that the U will hire 18 additional researchers and Mayo will hire 14 additional researchers. What I can tell you is that the partnership has already created an Office of Business Development, which is the commercialization arm. They're taking the intent is to take this research and ultimately commercialize it. And create new companies, additional companies. Whether this funding will provide 14, 16, 50, 100 additional researchers at either of these institutions right now, I can't answer that question for you. Maybe the University of Minnesota or Mayo can, but ultimately what this is intended to do is it's intended to leverage the resources that already exist. The researchers at the U, the researchers at the Mayo who are doing this work, and give them help them collaborate in what they're doing, help them leverage what they do well, and work together, and fund additional research that wouldn't happen but for the existence of the partnership. If that research doesn't happen, the Office of Business Development, I think, is going to sit there pretty quiet. But that's already up and running, and they're working on commercializing all of this research as quickly as they can.
Well, Mr. Chair, if it's already up and running, has it gotten an appropriation in the past, state dollars? And what would that number be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riccovina, I believe that in 2003 legislature, we appropriated $2 million to the partnership. That was the initial appropriation. As you've heard in some of the previous hearings, they funded, was it four research projects or nine research projects? Four research projects. I'm phoning a friend in the audience, there, Representative Rivina. Four research projects, a couple of patents have been applied for, a number of additional, I believe some NIH funds have been leveraged because of the funding of that, and they're continuing to build on what they have. The thing that they want to do is ultimately, if they can be successful and make this partnership work, as they commercialize these projects, they're going to be able to self-sustain the partnership, and they're not going to have to come back to the legislature. That's certainly my goal, within a few years, the research is promising enough, and I think that it is, that the proceeds, if you will, from commercializing this research will continue to sustain the partnership into the future.
So, Mr. Chair, and Representative Coles, you know, I've sat on the IRRRB for 19 years now. We gave a grant of this size without any kind of a business plan or strings, it'd be all over the Minneapolis and St. Paul papers. But it wouldn't be complimentary. But I've learned a little bit about capitalism and that. I sit on the board, which I'm not very good at. And so we've kind of actually taken a little venture capital approach at times when we've invested in things. Is there any type of agreement with Mayo and the university that the state might get for evidently putting in $15 million or $75 million might get a return on their money if there's patents and that pending? And I see Mr. Iosso is in the audience, and I don't think you've developed telepathic communications yet with your genomics or biotech. Money.
He must be
giving hand signals. So maybe he could come down and tell us what they did with the $2 million and what patents are pending, and perhaps what if they, strike a cure for cancer or maybe have a growth hormone that can make me your height, Representative Coles, that we'll get some return for our investment off of it.
strategy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my name is Frank Yossi. I represent Mayo Clinic. With me is Scott Beck, who's a research administrator at Mayo. We apologize for the absence of Dr. Eric Wieben, who is the principal coordinator for Mayo, and Dr. Mark Paller from the University of Minnesota. We can't answer some of your questions. We don't have the presentation, but I think we can hit the essence. As Representative Coles mentioned, the legislature appropriated $2 million in 2003, and that was matched by $1 million each from the university and from Mayo. And actually, the results of that, and by the way, that included a business plan that we can make available to members of the committee, which was submitted and approved by Deed and the governor's office, and was also to the legislature. We're pleased to talk about the results of that initial research because it really is quite dramatic. Let me just give you some ideas. As Representative Coles mentioned, four projects were funded out of more than 30 applications, and those applications required that the research be collaborations between Mayo and University of Minnesota researchers with some fairly stringent restrictions on them. We were very pleased at the number of investigators that were involved in the initial round. We went through two cuts and ended up with these four projects. We actually had nine that could have been very easily funded, which were top-ranked research projects. And of the four that were funded, one was in obesity, one was in Alzheimer's, one involved heart disease, and one involved prostate cancer. And I also want to mention that because of the delay in the funding, that Mayo and the University Partnership received the money last May, and as of the end of the year, as of January actually, those 8 months resulted in five research publications, two national grant applications, one joint patent filing, as Representative Coles mentioned, the establishment of an Office of Business Development, and leverage funding from outside sources because of the promise shown by the partnership and because of the endorsement and funding, initial funding by the state. So we're extremely pleased with the results thus far, and we'd be very happy to come back and make the formal presentation to the committee if that's so desired.
Mr. Chair. Representative Yossi, you had heard me ask Representative Coles about any agreements with the state sort of acting as your venture capitalist. So let me ask you, what type of royalties or that would Mayo and the university have in their business plan and in their agreement, and is there anything arranged with the state like I asked?
Mr. Yossi.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I'd be happy to help answer that, but I could defer to Representative Gunther.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rukavina, it's called taxes. All these people that are employed will have jobs that they'll pay taxes on, and they'll all buy services from their various community ventures. And they in turn will employ people, and they'll send their kids to school, and they'll employ more teachers. I hope they're in Virginia and Fairmont. But that's how we get the money here.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Gunther, you've got a grocery store and your brothers run it while you're gone, or your brother. And I think you
it'll all work and I get all the benefits.
I know, secondhand bakery or whatever you used to bring up for us, but or day-old bakery. Day-old bakery, but whatever. But anyway.
Groceries feed the world.
But you're a business and you provide jobs and you pay taxes and you haven't... gotten a $15 million appropriation, but you didn't answer my question. I said to Mr. Yossi, what kind of a royalty arrangement do you and the university have on your patents, and what kind of return are you getting on our money, and are we getting any return on our money? Because I want to run government like a business. I hear my friends on the other side of the aisle talk about running government like a business all the time. So a business isn't going to give free money. I don't know what banks do. Although Representative Dill has figured out a way to get free money, but that's a whole other story. But he is a capitalist, so and a democratic one at that. So Representative Gunther kind of tried to deflect the attention away from a question I asked, but he never answered the question, and perhaps you could, Mr. Yossi.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Yossi, we'll let you answer, but we do have a long list of bills, and we will be back tonight if we don't get through them. I'd prefer to get through them before session if we can.
Mr. Chair, we'll be on the floor until midnight tonight, so I doubt if we're going to come back here, but that's another issue.
Maybe brevity is the soul of wit, but Mr. Yossi.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rubin, I'll try to be brief, and we can elaborate on this at any time you'd like. But the business plan involved a 5-year, $70 million appropriation from the state. And part of that business plan involved the proceeds, whether it be royalties or whatever, going back into the partnership for research and for that use exclusively. On the basis of that business plan, we had an outside economic firm do an analysis of the benefit to the state of Minnesota of this partnership. And while I don't have the entire plan with me here, the analysis with me, I certainly can get that for you. But what it projects, and this is a firm called Tripp Umbach out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, projects that in the year 2010, if this partnership is funded as the business plan calls for, there would be more than 4,000 additional jobs in Minnesota and $300 million in revenue returned to the state. And that is among really what Representative Gunther was getting at.
Oh, okay. Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther, let me tell you just a little story. Then a couple of years ago, Governor Pawlenty took $51 million out of a 21st Century Minerals Fund, which you're very, very well aware of, and the royalties alone that would have been created on our minerals would have been over $500 million in just a few years. But that money disappeared, but I suppose now it found its way over to this plan for a very needy area that needs economic development, Rochester and Minneapolis. So,
Representative Goodman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More a statement than a question, but I do want to remind the committee that there's no business plan here. There's no jobs promised. There's no concrete return to the state. There's no access for the state to any intellectual property rights. There's a lack of a very, very good budget process at the University of Minnesota, and there always has been in the way that money is used and budget accountability issues. So I think that this is a bad precedent to set, to just give money with a few lines and give that much money in a time when we don't have any.
Is it to that point, Representative?
Go ahead. You're in a hurry. Go ahead.
Representative Taylor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe it would be to Mr. Yossi. Hope I got that right. I'm concerned, we need to invest in our state. There's no doubt about that. But I think that so many other investments have been put on hold in the past year or so due to budget cuts. Now, I'm concerned in our tourism committee when we were dealing with possible appropriations for Explore Minnesota for putting basically a loan into that portion of our state for advertising and business development with tourism. That group had a matching fund that was part of that appropriation. I'm wondering if you have any sort of matching funds that are part of this as well. And I thought we dealt responsibly with that in the tourism committee. I would like to see that here. And of course the payback period, but I think you've already talked about that somewhat. Thank you.
Is that a statement or you want answered?
I wanted to know if there was any matching fund that went along with this, similar to what we had dealt with Explore Minnesota. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Saylor, not specifically. I will tell you that Mayo and the university have already invested over $1 billion in genomics and are asking for this money from the state as the leverage to get us into the next to the next level. As I mentioned earlier, there is a business plan which has been submitted to the legislature and to the governor through deed and has been accepted and reviewed, and there is also an economic model that shows the results of this investment.
Representative Spencer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe the state of Wisconsin is investing $500 million, is that correct? $750 million. We're trying to invest $70 million in the next 5 years, and that money we're hoping is going to leverage itself so we end up with even more than they do. So our return on our investment is going to be absolutely astronomical. And I think that you got to remember that by investing a little bit with the two institutions we have, the University of Minnesota and what they bring to the table, and Mayo and what they bring to the table, will leverage more than the state of Wisconsin, $750 million, with $70 million.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, and that's a good point, keep up with the Joneses next door. But, I don't know in Wisconsin if they've cut their K-12 spending by almost $200 million a year, and or if they've raised nursing home taxes by $2,000 a year, or if they reinstituted, of course they didn't have Harold Sasson, but maybe Joe McCarthy's old age lien law. I don't know if they had, you know, but we've done all of those things here. And so to compare us to Wisconsin is a totally different issue. What we're trying to say here, I think I and Representative Goodwin is, fine, let's put the money out there, but let's raise the money and let's have a little stake in it too. Now, Mr. Iosi, you're a good lobbyist, very good lobbyist, and I like you because you're Italian.
I'm sure.
You know, and that's right. You've got everything.
Another genomics experiment gone awry. But anyway,
I think there's got to be a little more substance to this bill and benefit just the promise of taxes, because we, you know, up on the range made a really big promise in taxes and royalties and everything else, and in moving into the 21st century and our minerals development, and the governor took the money, but evidently he's found a place to spend it. No, he didn't.
We tried to.
No. I'm babbling over here. To
I know. Representative Rukavina, I'd be happy to move the entire Wisconsin budget tonight in session, if you'd like, and that would solve our entire budget problem and give us a surplus.
Hey, Representative Wilson, to that point, I will join on with you, because I don't think the good folks of Apple Valley and that area would enjoy the property tax increases they would see from that. But maybe they would. I mean, if you want to do it that way, we can do it that way.
The massive income tax cut would more than make up for it. Representative Liebling?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the concerns that I'm hearing from my DFL colleagues on this committee, and we talk about the need to invest to keep Minnesota strong in so many areas, and I mean, many of us realize that this is just one area, you can't get something for nothing. If you want to get a return for the state of Minnesota, you need to make some investments. Now, we can disagree sometimes about exactly what those investments should be, but I think that if we look into the future and we want to be a little bit visionary, and we look around and we see what's happening around the country and in the world, this is an area where we have the possibility of being really ahead of the curve going into the future. I mean, this is an area where we here in Minnesota are uniquely ready to jump on this. As has been discussed, we will get a huge return from this investment. I understand that the concerns that are being spoken around here, and I guess I would urge my Republican colleagues to think about raising some extra funds so that we can make some of these very key investments that we do need to make, and not selling ourselves short. So, for example, we have to be trading off between something like education and higher education, which we also desperately need to keep competitive, and something like this, which is such a worthy project and so very important to our future. I mean, I would just hate to see us miss these opportunities for lack of $15 million in the first year, for example. I just think we would be very, very short-sighted if we let that happen. So I would urge everybody to support this bill. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Coles renews his motion. Well,
Mr. Chair.
House File 430. Representative Rukavina.
I just got to comment, Representative Liebling, and I agree with what you're saying, but let's, you know, hope that as the mayor finds using genomics or whatever they use to find a prostate, better prostate cancer cure, whatever that he just mentioned, that we don't have to go to Canada to buy the drugs. And that's what I was, trying to imply here, that since we're putting out the money, I think there should be some kind of a return for the state, because it seems that we do all the research in this world, and then it ends up that the rest of the world benefits from our research, and we pay the bills.
Thank you. That helped my decision on the bill. Representative Coles renews his motion that House File 434 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development, Economic Opportunity Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
How much money have you spent already?
Representative Vanderveer? Representative Vanderveer moves that House File 751 be recommended to pass. And where is this going? And re-referred to Government Operations.
Yes, mine.
Representative Vanderveer, you want to start out with your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would move the DE2 amendment.
Representative Vanderveer moves the DE2 amendment. Should we just adopt it and then is that your preference and then you can talk about it?
We could, Mr. Chair, because it is the bill. So.
Okay. To get the bill in the shape the author wants to talk about it, we'll move the DE2 amendment. All in favor of the DE2, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 751 is designed to revive the Electronic Real Estate Task Force, which expired due to the meltdown last year in the legislative session. And what we intend to do is bring it back with some modifications. Some important modifications includes the fact that all four pilot counties can turn back on their doing electronic transfers immediately after the bill is enacted. And just to discuss, kind of bring people, if you're not familiar with it, up to speed on what the electronic real estate is about, I've got Mr. Black here from the Secretary of State's office.
Mr. Black, would you...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Bert Black. I'm a business and legal analyst with the Secretary of State's office. And while the Secretary of State's office does know real estate transactions, the Secretary was the chair of the prior Electronic Real Estate Reporting Task Force, and I was the staff person who monitored that for her. Let me give you just a very brief history. This is a legislative task force. It was actually started informally in 1999 by a group of county recorders who approached some legislators and the secretary. They asked the secretary to act as the head of this group to provide a state presence. The group was legislatively established in 2000 in the laws of 2000, Chapter 391. It was given funding in 2001 through a 50-cent surcharge on real estate transactions, and that the task force and the funding were extended in 2002 and in 2003. We did have legislation, as Representative Vanderveer mentioned, to further extend the life of the task force in the omnibus budget bill in the last year, but of course that was not enacted. So the task force unfortunately expired in June 30th of 2004. We're working with Representative Vanderveer on this current legislation. What is this project? Let me give you a little bit of background. This is a legislative project to provide for statewide standards for residential real estate transactions to be done electronically. Standards, not systems. A standard allows for open architecture and for vendor competition to write software to the standard. A system, particularly enterprise computing, is an invitation to a mess. And so from the very beginning, everybody agreed standards were the way to go. Standards must be the same across the state to work. These standards that we developed, and we did develop standards and adopt standards for a certain very basic residential real estate transactions such as certificates of release and satisfaction of mortgages, have been developed with organizations in coordination with organizations working on national standards in this area. We've used a scientific method. The programming has been developed. The schema, if that's a computer programming architecture word, but I'm a lawyer. I don't understand half of this stuff either, but I can tell you that the method we've used is scientific. It's been validated by computer professionals. It's been baselined. We've taken baseline measurements We've piloted the phase one documents that I mentioned. The results are analyzed for feedback to make changes before a final set of standards is to be put in place. That final set is yet to be done. In this process, outside review is absolutely vital. Also, the real estate industry, which, by the way, the realtors, the Bar Association, Real Property Section, all sorts of private organizations have been very supportive, both in their involvement in the original task force and in, frankly, in their investment, very supportive of the effort of this task force. But the entire industry must be able to sign off, not just the organizations that handle paper filings right now. We do have an extensive website at the LCC website, where all the work product is there. We put it up there. We froze it as of last June 30th in the hopes that we'd be able to come back and get this thing rolling again, because we're really about more than three-quarters of the way in terms of the effort to get it all done. We did have success in the Phase 1 document standard setting. We had four pilot counties: Dakota, Lyon, Renville, Hennepin. There were great results. To do a satisfaction of mortgage or a certificate of release, sometimes in the paper world that takes up to 30 days elapsed time. Frankly, the results were just amazing with this system. Those documents were sent, filed, and returned for confirmation within about 90 seconds. 90 seconds versus 30 days. Dakota County particularly did a great job with this. They did thousands of these. Thousands. I think in one day they did approximately 570 of them in 90 minutes. Done. In, filed, out, done. What's left to do? Deeds, mortgages, certificates of real estate value, wealth certificates. Particularly the deeds and the mortgages, those are the things the public is going to see. A lot of the programming infrastructure for these remaining four has already been put in place. It would be a shame to waste the investment we've already made. But we do have some more to do to finish the programming and make this ready for piloting. The piloting of these additional documents is a little more complicated, because in most counties it will involve not just the county recorders. Phase one documents involve county recorders. Now we're going to involve in many counties auditors and treasurers. There's going to have to be coordination between those offices, and so that makes the piloting a little more tricky to set up. Who benefits? There's cost savings to counties, some of which have already been realized. Cost savings to lenders, especially in the phase one documents. With these phase two documents, time savings and perhaps cost savings to residential real estate buyers and sellers. The other thing is that there's a desire been expressed. We had testimony over in the other body. The Farm Credit Services folks would like to move on to agricultural real estate, and I would presume commercial real estate will be after that. But we can't do that until we finish the residential piece. This bill will be heading to finance after it goes through GovOps. There are $1.764 million sitting in an LCC account. They were paid for by real estate users, filers. That's to fund phase two. It's just sitting there. We're asking for that money. Basically, what does this bill do? Just four things. It allows the four pilot counties to turn their pilot projects back on the day after final enactment of this bill. It also allows other counties to use the methods already proven in these pilot counties upon a written request to the task force. So we turn on the old counties and we allow other counties then to participate in the benefits that the state and the users have already paid for. It reestablishes the task force as of July 1st, 2005, with a diverse but smaller and more agile membership. It's 15 instead of 44. And finally, it provides the funding that I described. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I believe Mr. Kilchristy may have a remark as well.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Tony Galkowski, Deputy Secretary of State. My comments will be very brief because I know you have a long agenda. My comments relate back to my past life, and that is, as a principal of a high school looking at accreditation, one of the things that we did is have to go out and find somebody to accredit our school and take a look at the standards that we were presenting. We couldn't do that by just turning to the neighboring school. We had to go and find an accrediting association to make sure that we were doing the right job. This is what this task force is really doing. They're establishing standards, then opening those standards up, and I think it's very important. If we don't have a group out there to oversee the standard development and also standard approval, working with the vendors and making sure they meet those standards, we have some problems. The second point I'd like to make is that this is very important, especially phase two in development. Mr. Black already testified on the speed and some of the other things that were going on. But also, I think we need to understand who's going to benefit from this. It's not only the counties, it's not only Yolanders, it's not only the real estate. Eventually, who's going to benefit from this are those of us and your family, maybe yourself, kids, grandparents, in terms of getting their real estate done properly, their transactions done properly, in a quick manner, and looking towards the future. Phase two is going to require very careful consideration, and it's going to require very much great development, and that's what the task force is charged with. And so I hope you take a look at those risks and mitigating risk in terms of development of standards as being very important as you consider this bill.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, to emphasize the funds that they're referring to, the $1.7 million, were collected in agreement with the real estate industry for the purpose of finishing the work of this task force. So that was the promise made when it was collected, and that is what this bill allows to happen. And with that, great question.
Okay, I know we have some testifiers, so let's start with Janine Baker. Barker? Or maybe is it going to be a panel? Okay, great. As you each of you start, if you could introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Kniff, and I am the Hennepin County Recorder and Registrar of Titles. Members of the committee and Representative Vanderveer, I want to thank you for your attention to this particular topic. At least those of us in the real estate recording business view this as an important topic. I think Mr. Black summarized very well for you a little bit about the history and where things are at. Let me tell you a little bit more about the history that I think is significant for us to take a look at here today in terms of the proposed legislation. A year ago, when through no fault of really anyone's, the authority to do this real estate recording electronically was lost as part of the closing session here of the legislature. Good ideas sometimes don't come to fruition even in spite of ourselves. But one of the things that we thought that made a lot of sense this year, I was asked by my superiors to find a way to see to it that good government, the ability for counties in this particular case, to try and find a way to work with our customers, what we do best, to move forward on this pilot project to record these documents electronically. That was viewed, quite frankly, as you've heard earlier. That's good government. It's good for our customers. It's good for our citizens. It helps speed the flow of commercial commerce in our cities and our counties throughout the entire state. Whether it's in Hennepin or Coochiching, it doesn't make any difference. That's a very important topic. The task force, I think, was very successful in it identified standards, and at least several of the counties that move forward with pilots had gotten going to begin recording documents electronically, but we got cut off here, of course, at the end of June. We'd like to be able to move forward with that. I see that in the amended bill here, Representative Vanderveer's, he's taken that into account. One of the things that happened last year as a result of the legislation and authority to record electronically being lost
is a lot of our business customers have focused their attention elsewhere other than Minnesota, for fear that maybe Minnesota isn't serious about electronic recording, for fear that they don't want to move ahead and put their attention and efforts elsewhere. I've even been told by my superiors in Hennepin County that, you know, can if find a way at least to, so that we can move forward on this and pilot this and gain the knowledge necessary in order to come back to the legislature and tell you what does work and what doesn't work. One of the things that I see in the bill that Representative Vandeveer has put forth to you is that you've combined a bill that I think Representative Garofalo, if I'm pronouncing that right, from Dakota County had proposed here and that you had talked about a few weeks ago, which basically would have made it possible for pilot counties and other counties to move forward with our ability to take the standards that had been approved and record those three document types, not only in the five pilot counties, it was actually Roseau County was a fifth one, but in any other county throughout the state of Minnesota, if those counties were to adopt systems that met the standard that had been approved by that task force. And it would also do one other thing that isn't addressed in Representative Vandeveer's bill, and that is make it possible for other competitive vendors to develop systems that would meet those statewide standards so that they, too, could compete for business with other counties. In other words, providing a competitive situation so that we aren't locked in with just selected vendors. What we wanted to be able to do is, knowing some of the fiscal issues that you all face here, is to find a way to at least let us as counties begin piloting the recording of those documents through the use of those standards without requiring you to have to fund any additional money. And that's what, quite frankly, Representative Garofalo's bill would have made possible here. Now, I see in the bill that's put forth here by Representative Vandeveer, he's incorporated many of those concepts into at least the first section of the bill. My concern is this, and this is what I put forth to you all to give serious consideration. We'd very much like to see those sections separated. Let those of us in the counties that do our business with our customers, our banking industry, our real estate customers, move forward in working with them to make these standards work, to find ways that we can get additional customers to come on using those standards and find issues that we need to deal with for the future. Let that go through. There are all sorts of issues in the second half of the bill that get into a task force, financial considerations, funding issues, and I know the way things work over here, those will probably be dealt with at the end of session, and I know those things don't always go forward. And my concern is this, that if we don't send a message loud and clear to the business community that we are concerned about progressing with our electronic commerce, we're going to lose an opportunity that we may not be able to recapture again. And that's why I would see it as very valuable to separate those sections of the bill. The first section could move forward without any necessary fiscal impact, because those of us at the county level could begin using the standards that were already in place and moving forward. Not only the pilot counties that had done this, but making it possible for other counties throughout the state to do that as well. You can continue to debate the other issue in terms of the task force and the standards and moving forward with that for the future. And we know we need to deal with that in the long run. But quite frankly, the industry isn't necessarily even ready today to record documents such as mortgages electronically. They've got a lot of work yet to do in terms of developing their own expectations for what they want in that particular package. And that's not as critical as what I think is the most important part is for this body to send a clear message that we do want to progress with electronic commerce. We don't want issues of policy and funding to stand in that way. And I think separating the ability for counties to move forward with the standards that have already been in place for the three document types to do electronically is the way to make that happen. I thank you very much for your time, and after my other colleagues respond, I'd be happy to address any questions.
Questions from members? Would one of the other testifiers like to?
Mr. Chair, Representatives, my name is Kay Rookie. I'm the Martin County Recorder in Fairmont. I'm presently working on many national associations that involve the property record industry and electronic real estate recording. Basically, what I'm coming back and hearing from nationally is that electronic recording is available for these mortgages and satisfactions, for satisfactions and assignments, what we're presently doing. But the mortgages and the deeds have not been addressed specifically yet, and it is some time yet before they will be addressed and have standards ready for them. But Minnesota is ready to do to start back at electronically recording satisfactions and assignments. And Martin County in particular is too, because we have a validated software system and we would like to be e-recording like the other counties are too throughout the state. County government isn't necessarily responsible for the fact of getting the industry ready. It's the mortgage industry. It's the business industry that is the one that has to lead electronic recording, and they're not ready at this time. But we do see it coming in the future, and we would like to address these issues in the future. But we would first of all like to start e-recording immediately. And I'll pass this on to Gene Barker.
Barker, please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, my name is Janine Barker. I'm the Lyon County Recorder. I'm also the president of the Recorders Association and here to represent the fact that Minnesota is truly on new ground out there as far as looking at the fact that we want to be able to e-record statewide in every county, giving all of our customers the same opportunities as the larger counties that often have the revenue to do this. We set our goals at the beginning of the task force, which I've been on since the beginning, to be sure that that is something we could accomplish here. And that is the successful part of the task force, is that we have proven electronic recording can happen. It can happen in every county. Can happen with a little bit of equipment. It can happen with a lot of equipment. We have set up the standards to be sure that everyone can enter the playing field at whatever level they are. I guess I'm here to ask that you look back at the fact and look at the money that we've already spent in that task force. Let us turn the counties back on that have the capability to do so and meet the validation. That money, not for all counties, I cannot begin to tell you what it was for Hennepin County, but Lyon County received $56,000 from the task force to be a pilot county. I have used that money. I think I have used it wisely. We have proven that all counties, whatever size, can e-record. And that it is going to be the way of doing business. At the time I became a pilot county, I thought, well, if I get one or two, I will be very happy. I got 96 in Lyon County electronic recordings, and we just began when we had to shut down. I think it is our responsibility to be sure that we have not wasted that task force money, to be sure that we move ahead and be able to enter e-government effectively and efficiently. And I would, I guess, ask that you look at separating out the creation of that task force and the complications that's going to create, and let the e-recording move ahead as is now. And let us hammer out the task force as it needs to be. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak in for or against this bill? Anyone else? Okay. Questions from members? Representative Mullery?
Mr. Chairman, I was just trying to track. Is everybody now in agreement on this? Because we had two competing bills, very different approaches, and I'm trying to figure out now one of them disappeared. Would somebody say whether now everybody's in agreement on this, or?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, certainly the first time we've seen Representative Vanderveer's bill here was this afternoon. I would tell you that the bill that we were most comfortable with, that we had spent time with, is Representative Garofalo's bill. That's the bill that we would prefer to see move forward. in terms of at least authorizing counties to do that which the task force had already approved. Now, Section 1 of what I understand is Representative Vanderveer's bill attempts to roll in part of Representative Garofalo's bill, which I'm pleased with. But by putting it together with the task force, there's going to be issues that you'll end up with in conference committee on financial issues that I'm afraid that's going to have the potential of, if we don't get it through, I don't want to have happen this time what happened last time. And if you were to separate that out, or if you were to deal with Representative Garofalo's bill, he would make it possible for us to move forward with electronic recording now and then deal with the policy issue in terms of a task force, deal with the funding issue and all that sort of thing later on.
Representative Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think while the first part of the bill would allow these counties to do that, there's several issues surrounding that. One is the accountability that the legislature built into this originally. Remember, the enabling legislation says notwithstanding any other law to the contrary. So all the real estate laws are held to the side in order to allow this to go forward. The second thing is what splitting them out wouldn't do is advance the development to include all the forms. And I think that is a promise that was made to the people when the surcharge was put on and the money was raised. And that is our goal, and I think that's what we need to get to. I think this bill accomplishes both of those things. It allows the counties to go back to doing the filings, and it allows the state to move forward on getting an electronic real estate filing system that is complete.
Representative Muller?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cunniff, if there, my understanding was that the Bar Association and the most of the recorders were in agreement with the Garofalo approach, and that, for one thing, there's very big question about some of the other forms as to whether anybody would be ready to even get into that. What is the position of those two? And I guess I'm in a difficult situation here because I was ready to vote for the Garofalo bill. It sounded much better to me. And now suddenly I don't have that opportunity. I don't know what happened. But everybody I talked to from the bar and recorders said that that was the thing to do. And now we're faced, for some reason, without that. What is a proposal?
Representative Andrew?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, the proposal is House File 751. It incorporates the Garofalo bill, but we do need uniformity, and since I was involved in this, been involved in it the last few years that I'm in the profession, we need uniformity throughout the state on these standards. The standards are the issue because any vendor then can comply with those standards, any county can comply with it, and we have a system that is seamless. But it does need to be uniform, and I think if we separate out these functions, that is a real problem potentially. And so we need the supervision of the task force as it was originally decided by this legislature for that purpose.
Mr. Chairman, I'd asked Mr. Cunniff or one of the other recorders what their view is on this.
Mr. Cunniff?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, the recorders would prefer to see Representative Garofalo's bill at least be adopted. We haven't really taken a position with regard to the task force on that particular item. We certainly know that in the future there will be a need for standards to go beyond the three document types. But quite frankly, until we get experience with the three document types and actually have hands-on experience in working with our customers, we're not going to be in a position to come and identify and put together those final standards that we'd use for other document types. These are three document types that don't have some of the financial risks that you will find with mortgages and that you'll find with real estate deeds. And that's why we'd identified that's the place to start, that's the place to work together with our customers. And we're certainly more than willing to work with the legislature. We want uniform standards as well. All the recorders want uniform standards throughout the state. We think that's definitely in all of our best interests. But my concern, quite frankly, is that with the Garofalo bill, you're able to move forward now immediately, and you don't have the issues surrounding what that task force should be or should not be, what the length of it should be, what the cost of it should be, what the funding of it should be, all of those other public policy issues that you'll have to deal with. And in the meantime, we're losing time to do that which everybody has been in agreement that we want to do. And that's record electronically the three document types that the old task force had approved, and we did have standards that were met and were uniform.
Mr. Chair and members, as president of the Recorders Association, I would like to be able to tell you that if we go back to e-recording as we were in the piloting and let counties who have had validated systems, more than half the counties in the state could go to e-recording on the documents that have already had standards set for them. This will allow us to gather a lot more information on how it works, what the effectiveness is, the cost efficiency of it is. All of these things need to be tested prior to setting up another standards committee, which the reporters do believe, you know, is necessary to have a standards committee and a place to set those standards so everyone can do business by them. But to take time to format that committee and put it in place and to begin studying before we can e-record seems like we're losing a lot of time that's costing everyone money.
To the witnesses, would you like me to maybe lay the bill over again and we can wait and just try to figure out what we're going to do here? You might not make committee deadlines, and so you might have to be back next year to get this going.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would like to see you pass a bill that would make it possible for electronic recording to move forward at the counties throughout the state for the three document types that we have. There is no need, in my judgment, to lay this thing over in terms of that. That's pretty plain, simple, and clear, and that's really what we would like to see.
Okay. Well, maybe the parties can work with Representative Vanderveer as it goes to other committees. Representative Vanderveer, did you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, that was my comment, that I would hope that we can do that. Okay. We would certainly be willing to.
Representative Gunther? Representative Rukavina? Representative Gunther, you?
I was just going to ask Mike County Recorder, make sure that in no way this will take. We have so few jobs in my county that I want to make sure we protect every one of them. It won't have any effect that way at all, right? Then what? Do we have a big problem with this bill then? Is this bill or no bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, we do need the e-record. We do need to start where we left off. We do need that portion. But right now, we don't need necessarily to be bogged down with a task force at this time that will create new standards on documents. We're not ready, or is the industry ready to record at this time. But we can start recording the documents that we need to right now, and it is available. The industry is ready for that. But the standard-setting group that the task force would be creating is for documents that the industry, the mortgage and the business industry, is not ready for at this time. It will be in the future, but not at this time.
So you know what? You would prefer no bill to this bill?
I would prefer a bill that would allow us to e-report.
That's not the option. Representative Vanderveer.
Mr. Chair, members, I just ask you to consider if we had 87 counties setting standards, I think, number one. Number two, I think, you know, we'll be certainly willing to work with the concerns that have been expressed here as we go to the next committee. But, you know, we have to have one place for standards to be developed, I think.
Representative Rukavina, then Representative Mueller.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, I'm trying to follow this here, but I'm, you know, my county recorder, you know, are the county recorders, I thought they recorded, you know, real estate transfers and mortgages and even kept my cute little footprint and my birth certificate, which I'd like to put on my website, by the way. But anyway, you know, yeah. But so I'm not following where the connection is between the Secretary of State's office and this whole task force being appointed by the Secretary of State, basically. So am I missing something here, or is this like a new thing, or do you have this interaction today with my deed in St. Louis County going to the record or to the Secretary of State's office? And so what's going on? Can somebody tell me?
Support?
Mr. Chair.
Well, maybe maybe I could hear it from a county recorder before the Secretary of State.
That's fine.
Mr. Chair and members, the question has never been whether or not we needed a committee to set standards, or that we should have one set of standards for the entire state. There has been some question on the makeup of that committee, and at what point and what level of government that should be at. Since real estate records are handled by county government, county institutions, it seems to us that the standards could be developed under a committee that was weighted a little bit more on the county side than the state side.
Mm-hmm.
And if, you know, somebody is the one who always has to say it is, we just want to play nice.
That sounds like a great topic for the Government Operations Committee, who deals with task force stuff.
Well,
and
Mr. Chair, that's what I'm trying to grasp here. I'm wondering why my legal description and ownership, but which is now in the county recorder's office in St. Louis County, if I bought another piece of real estate, why it would have to be coordinated to the Secretary of State's office. And that's why I'm puzzled here with what's going on. And when I looked at the House Research Bill summary, and I was looking at the task force and the makeup of the task force, and I couldn't follow it on here, so I went back to here, and it basically looks like this task force is going to be controlled by the Secretary of State's office, because she, in this case, is going to appoint 7 members and I'm sure be in cahoots, if that's the right word, or whatever, with the vice chair, who's going to be the chief information officer of the state. And so I'm wondering where the interconnection, and I think it's important to this committee, where is the interconnection between our county recorders and what they do currently and the Secretary of State's office and what they're trying to consolidate here in this task force?
Maybe we could hear from Mr. Kilkuski about that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukabina, the establishment of the task force was a legislative initiative that was brought through this legislature. As that bill was drafted, as the task force came forward, the way it's pulled together, the Secretary was given that authority. All this bill is doing is reinstating that task force that did not get reinstated because of what happened last time in the last legislative session. Now, during that period of time, the pilot counties did develop these standards, you know, are moving forward. What happened when we didn't finish this at the end of the legislature, that stopped. The bill that you have in front of you today tries to take care of the issue that they raised about being able to turn the switch back on, and also brings forward the notion of the task force, which was trying to reinstate. Representative Vanderveer tried to explain this by the fact the matter is that somewhere along the line, we have to have somebody that's going to check over the task, the standards, and the implementation of those standards, looking, making sure the vendors get that. And that fell back to the state, and that was what the enabling legislation did, was to have them develop the standards, to be able to go to the vendors to make sure that those standards are being met. Now, the pilot counties are out there, they're doing theirs, and they're doing a great job, and Mr. Black testified to that. We're looking at expanding this to the future, and so part of the task force responsibility is going to be to make sure that happens and continues to happen in terms of, you know, looking at the vendors that are working with the various counties to make sure those standards are met. The second part of this is also looking towards the future, which I think is very, very important. We still need to look at future development as this goes forward. And so the Office of Secretary of State, the Secretary of Self got involved because it was legislatively scheduled to do so. And we're just trying to reestablish that. And that's what was in the bill last year. And what this bill does is tries to address both of those issues.
Okay, Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just
It sounds to me, and maybe I could get a confirmation from the actual county recorders, but in the end, Representative Gunther said it's all or nothing. I think, would it be correct, what I'm hearing is that you would like somebody at, we can't do it now because I wasn't prepared for this, but you would like somebody to offer an amendment someplace with the Garofalo bill on it, and that would be what you would prefer. I know, personally, I would much rather rely on, I've known Bert and Tony for many years, they're friends of mine, I would rather have the people actually in the trenches, plus the Bar Association, doing what they think is right, and would that be what you want, so that would answer Representative Gunther's concern? And I don't need a long explanation.
A short one would be good, considering the time. And there's three bills left.
Four. Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, yes, I certainly think that would be very nice if this committee were to take Representative Garofalo's bill and pass it, yes.
Could we just hear from the head of the association? Just a yes or no? I can't remember her name, the head of the association. Just yes or no.
Ms. Parker?
Yes, okay. I agree with my
Mr. Chair. I would just comment quickly, if I could. We have to remember that it isn't just the counties that worked on this. The real estate industry has themselves, as near as we can calculate, contributed in in-kind contributions almost $800,000. There's real estate mortgage title. There are a lot of people who have been involved in this, who have worked hard and invested in it, and I think we need to continue it with the complete representation of the industry, and that's what this legislation would do. So I don't believe they should be separated.
I think members are fully informed and ready to vote. Representative Vanderveer renews his motion that House File 751 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Veterans Affairs. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At some point, I suppose we'll be meeting after session. I'd like to move to reconsider House File 563 and bring it back before the committee.
Are you making that motion now, and do you want to discuss it now?
It'll be at your discretion, Mr. Chairman. And the reason for this is that I apologize. I have my ethanol bill up in transportation finance. I've got a few questions I'd like to ask, and then I'm sure it'll pass out after that. Whatever works in your schedule.
Representative Rukavina tells us we're going to be on the floor till about midnight, so I'm not sure if we'll be back here tonight. In which case we would lose the bill from our possession. So if you want to make your motion, you can make it now, and we can discuss the motion. It's a debatable motion. We can discuss the motion at that time.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee reconsider House File 563.
Representative Davids moves reconsideration of House File 563. Discussion of the motion. Do you want to explain your purpose?
Mr. Chairman, I've got a few questions I'd like to ask. And then shouldn't take that long, I wouldn't think.
Discussion from members?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Rukavina.
This is the Knobloch bill?
This is the Knobloch bill on service cooperatives. Is there a discussion from members? Seeing none, all in favor of reconsideration, say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. In front of us now is the motion. I think we need to remake the motion to get the bill in front of us. So the chair moves that House File 563 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. Representative Knobloch, do you want to comment first?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I don't know how much I need to say. I think you all heard this an hour ago. I know that Representative Davids has concerns about the bill. I have to say that the witness that I had, Mr. Paul Brinkman from Mountain Iron, has returned, and so I don't have his services here anymore. Apparently Representative Davids had another commitment early in the meeting when this was called, but members, this is a Good bill. I believe everyone voted for it when it came out of here an hour ago. Last year when it was before this committee and Representative Davids was chair, every single individual but Representative Davids voted for it. And members, I think that this will provide some additional choices for people for health insurance throughout our state. You know, if we were going to have a new company come into our state who had never sold health insurance before and offer to put up offices and sell their health insurance products, we would think it's a great thing. We'd like those additional choices. Why wouldn't we want to provide those choices for a company that's already here and has already provided insurance to thousands of public sector employees? Why not have that for the private sector? Members, I hope you'll again approve the motion.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. If you look back at the reason service co-ops were started, it was certainly not for health insurance. Then sometime after they were started, they did get in the business of health insurance for school teachers. Now what we're looking at is the possibility of them being in I'll say, in competition with all your Main Street businesses, all your Main Street independent insurance agents, and with some real, I think, some unfair advantages. But I just have a few questions. And maybe this is to Mr. Straczynski, how many of the service co-ops, how many service co-ops are there in the state?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bill Straczynski, representing Minnesota Regional Service Agencies, old service cooperatives and formerly EXOs. There is 8 service cooperatives in Minnesota.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Straczynski, how many of them want to participate in this program?
Mr. Straczynski, sorry, I can't say that.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you know, I don't know exactly. I suspect here's just like everything else that's happened with respect to the service cooperatives over the years. You've given the statutory authority to do something, told us to do it. We've gone out and done that. You set the policy for us that it's okay for us to be in this business. I suspect that everyone will probably take a look at exactly the forming these pools, this business product, and delivering it, making it available to the private sector.
Thank you, Mr. David. Chairman, Mr. Straczynski. Will the co-ops offer their own products, or will they be offering existing products?
Mr. Straczynski.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that would it would have to be a new product and a new pool. We will not commingle funds for the state local government pool. That's one pool we have. We operate. That's not commingled with the teacher pool, which is another fund, another pool. This would have to be a separate pool altogether. So.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Straczynski, now you got me doing it. Bill, what type of reserve requirements will this pool have?
Bill. Mr. Chairman. Greg, we're going to, Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, we're going to have the same whatever the Department of Commerce requires us to do. We will have to follow, as the bill says, we'll follow all state laws on this particular matter.
Representative Davis.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Straczynski, what does the department have a stance on this bill? Are they for it, against it, or neutral, or?
Bill?
Chairman? I have no idea. The bill has been around a couple of years. I've had no conversations with the Department of Commerce on it. I have no idea what their position may or may not be.
Mr. Chairman and members, I know what the final result is going to be on this. I have history here. Not on my side, but I'd simply ask for a roll call, and that's all the questions I have.
Seeing no further questions, the chair renews this motion that House File 563 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register.
Really, I just want Robert to see clock.
It'll take her a while. She's not here.
Representative Wilkin?
Aye.
Representative Atkins? Representative Clark? Representative Davids?
No.
Representative Fritz?
Yes.
Representative Gazelka?
Aye.
Representative Goodwin? Representative Gunther?
Aye.
Representative Hamilton?
Yes.
Representative Howells? Representative Yaros? I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Aye.
Representative Coles?
Aye.
Representative Liebling? Representative Loeffler?
Aye.
Representative Moe? Representative Mullery? Representative Pepin? Representative Powell?
Aye.
Representative Rukavina?
Aye.
Representative Sala? Representative Sertich? Representative Stevenson?
Aye.
Representative Simpson?
Aye.
Representative Soderstrom?
Aye.
Representative Vanderveer? And Representative Zellers?
Aye.
Which that one?
Both ones.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank everybody for now. I've got to be able to keep my teacher health bill on the floor.
There being 15 ayes and one nay, the motion prevails.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman and members.
Okay, members, we will be in recess now. We'll be coming back to room 10. Is that correct? We'll be coming back to room 10 if we're out of session before midnight.
We have two more bills, Mr. Chairman.
We have three more bills. So we're in recess.
I don't know.